Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Tracy Dawson is an award-winning actress and a TV writer who started her career at the Second City in Toronto. She's probably best known for her work on the Canadian sitcom Call Me Fitz, where she won a Canadian Screen Award, Canada's version of the Emmys. Tracy is also the author of Let Me Be Frank. In her book, she profiles brave women who stuck it to the man by dressing like men. Tracy joined us from her home in Los Angeles. She says that this project began as a TV show, but that it ultimately found a home as a witty and untold history of some important women.
I had all this research and I just started writing pages. And then I sent them out to some literary agents. I had a script deal at the time with like a major movie star. So I felt like I could just say like, hey, I've got this script deal. I'm a TV writer in LA. Like, but I just thought this might be a book. Is this a book? Like, I just asked people outright. And the feedback that I got was, yes, this is a book. You should write this book. And so it feels like a higher calling. Like, you know what I mean? I get to be funny. I get to like exercise my voice, my creativity, but also like, I really, really want to tell people about these women. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like this great support from them almost.
Mm-hmm. And the beauty of writing a book, of course, is that you don't, you have total creative freedom. You don't have to answer to the suits.
I mean, to a certain degree, obviously, you still have editors and publishers and people
true.
Who are like, but yes, I mean, I'm just really glad because that's my voice.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah. That's your authentic Dawson-esque voice. And it's very, very different, very unique. It's unique to you. One of the women you wrote about is Ellen Kraft. Can you tell us about Ellen?
Yes. Ellen Kraft is one of the people that when I came upon her story, first I was blown away, but then I was angry that I had never heard her story before. I was actually upset. So Ellen Kraft was a light-skinned, mixed-race, enslaved woman who escaped from her enslavement along with her husband. She was posing as a white male plantation owner, and her husband passed as her enslaved valet. And so they made it from Georgia all the way up to Free Philadelphia, and they had to take trains and boats. And it was absolutely ingenious. It's the most incredible story of American history that should be known by everybody. So I just was like, I can't believe this incredible story. You know what I mean? Like, you're first blown away and then you're angry because you're just like, wait a second. Why is there a biopic about Elvis out? Sorry, I shouldn't like slam Elvis. But like, honestly, an Elvis biopic and there's no movie about Ellen Kraft. Come on, you people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hopefully your book, people reading about Ellen Kraft and her husband, William, hopefully they will that will raise awareness.
The hope is definitely that people would read the book and then want to go down their own rabbit holes. The chapter in the middle, which is called Anonymous Was a Woman, features a lot of authors who wrote using a male pseudonym or anonymously. And so when people reach out to me and go like, I can't wait to read this book and that book and to learn more about this author, and I didn't know this about Jane Austen, it's like, just to see people getting all riled up, I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another one of the remarkable women you write about is Pauline Hopkins. What is Pauline's story?
Pauline was one of the most prominent African-American writers and thinkers during her time. And I write very little about Pauline. She's featured in the Anonymous Was a Woman chapter, but I wanted to include her because she did not disguise herself as a man for protection. I wanted to include her because she took on male pseudonyms in her writing because she was so prolific and she was such a part of that early African-American journal, whose name escapes me at this time. But she was so involved as a writer and editor in that journal that if she had used her real name on all of the pieces that she wrote and all of the discourse that she was a part of, it would have looked, I don't know, I guess to them it would have seemed unseemly, it would have seemed strange. And so she took on these male pseudonyms for different pieces of her writing so it didn't look like she dominated the magazine, which I think is just the coolest because I don't think a lot of people know about Pauline Hopkins. I really hope that people read these like little introductions. You know, I can't go into too much, right? Otherwise, I'd just be writing an entire book about each person. But I hope that they read about Pauline Hopkins and say, oh my gosh, like, I want to seek out her writing. I mean, she also wrote what is some considered is the beginning of Afrofuturism in some of the writing that she did, and that she created a world that some people have compared with Wakanda from Black Panther. So she's incredibly important to the movement and especially to Afrofuturists.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's so dense, the book. Yeah, because I don't want to use deep dives, but it's the phrase that's coming to mind now. These deep dives into these people that we've never heard of, these remarkable women, but that we should have heard of. I'm curious, can you point to one woman you wrote about who resonated the most with you?
You know, I really love the story of, well, I don't love the story. I was moved by the story of Dorothy Lawrence. Dorothy Lawrence was a young woman who wanted to be a journalist. So World War I was happening. And she was like, you know what? I'm writing these little puff pieces. You know, they give you women's stuff to write about, like little, probably just tiny little columns. And she said, I want to get to the front. And I want to report on the war. And if I get a real scoop, then people are going to take me seriously. And it was a really big deal. And she was laughed at, you know, all the newspapers and the War Office laughed in her face and said, you know, and she was 18, 19 years old. And she decided, you know what, I'm going to get on the ferry at Folkestone and I'm going to cross the channel. She basically got a little bag put together and she put her bike on the ferry and she went over to France, which is unbelievably incredible to me, like the chutzpah. And so she went over there and she was like sussing everything out, you know, she was like, okay. And she met some like boys from back home and they basically were like, yeah, you could probably get to the front, but you're not going to be able to get there as a woman. And so they helped her get a new ID. They helped her get a uniform. One of them cut off her hair and she made it to the front, which is unbelievable. She was discovered after 10 days. Like, she made it all the way to the trenches, and she was posing with the help of some people from back home, like some other soldiers. She was posing as a sapper. And so what they did was they dug mines and they put explosives in it. It was a big part of trench warfare. And after about 10 days, she was found out and she was taken, you know, as a prisoner. They didn't know if she was a spy. They didn't know what she was. And she kept telling them, you know, I want to be a journalist. I wanted to get to the front. I want to report on it. And it was so mind-boggling to them. They were like, why aren't you at home trying to have children? Like, what are you doing? And so she was cross-examined and she was just interrogated by many, many people. They hold her up in a nunnery because they weren't sure if she was a spy. She eventually was released. She was sent back home. And she was forbidden about writing a word about her experiences until after the armistice, after the war ended. And then she did write a book. And I read that book. And I thought it was absolutely delightful, start to finish, funny, smart, like a great storyteller. And the book was a failure. She was laughed at. She was thought of as a freak. Her story was spun as a failure, like a joke. And I guess it resonates so much with me because I'm someone that goes after things. Like I want something and I go after it and it doesn't always work out, but she had such bravery to do that. And I just feel like her story should have or could have gone a different way. Like she could have been seen as wow, right? It could have been like, oh my gosh, you brave, young, you know, brash woman. And also she was funny. Like she was clearly a good writer. So anyway, that's the story that I just like love, because to me, in my eyes, as I say in the book, like she's a success. That's all there is to it. As soon as she got on that ferry with her bike, I'm already like, bravo, young woman.
Yeah, indeed. Bravo, young woman, indeed. And I can see, as you were describing her book, Dorothy Lawrence's book, I can see why she resonated with you so much, because it sounded like you were describing your own book. So that was very interesting. If you don't mind my asking, what emotions were you experiencing while you were writing Let Me Be Frank?
Oh, that's a great question. There were times where it was like dark, because when you keep bumping up against stories of women that just wanted to live their lives, pursue their dreams, play sports, like run and play outside, like just basic human stuff, right? When you keep coming up against these stories of it being prevented, stopped, it really wears on you. It can be demoralizing. However, that was not the dominant emotion. The dominant emotion was like, I guess I can't swear on this program, right? You'd have to bleep me out.
We'd have to bleep it, yeah.
I won't swear. It was F yeah. You know what I mean? It was like, look at us. So I felt a lot of pride and a lot of joy and a lot of like excitement to bring these stories. But also, there were definitely moments where, you know, I needed to take a lie down. I mean, the witch chapter, the chapter about the witch pricker.
Oh, yeah, which I wanted to ask you about. Oh, yeah, can you tell us a bit about the witch pricker since you brought it up?
Sure. I mean, obviously, the witch hunts of the 1600s were super intense. They were particularly intense in Scotland. Christian Cottle was a woman who, I suppose, we don't have all the details. You have to fill in a little bit of the blanks with her story. But she disguised herself as a man to take on the role of witch pricker. Witch pricking is not something I'd ever heard of before I started researching this book. You know, one of the modes that they would try to discover if you were a witch, right? So there's some really horrific modes, everything made up, all a joke, all a terrible pantomime, this whole part of history. You know, let's throw her in the water and see if she floats or she sinks, like this kind of a test. But one of the other modes was witch pricking. They'll take a long needle, which looks like it's from a David Cronenberg horror film, and stick it into the person's body. And if there's no pain or no blood resulting from this pricking, then you're a witch and you're going to be sentenced to die. As I say in the book, it should come as no surprise that the majority of the people that were found to be witches were women. Mm. And so Christian Cottle was like, you know what? I don't know. I just think of her as like kind of an opportunist, right? Which is like, I can disguise myself as a man and I can do this and, you know, make some money. And I'm thinking also self-preservation. If I'm disguised as a witch pricker, I won't be accused of witchcraft. So, I mean, it was such a heavy chapter to research because of just the violence and the, like, it's just all made up. Everything is just made up, and so many people died and were tortured. And so it was definitely like heavy. Oof.
Yeah. What have you learned about yourself from writing this book?
I have learned that I love research. I truly do. Before I start any script, like when I have an idea for a script or a show, sometimes I just have an inkling. I want it to be like something set here or something about this. It's like, and I do a lot of research. I do a lot of reading. Like if I know that it's going to be set in whatever city, I just want to know everything about that city. Like I want to be in that city. Well, not physically. I mean, if I had all the money in the world, I would travel all over and do all my research on the land. But, you know, I want to immerse myself. And so when it came to writing the book, like I talked to people who are researchers, actually, after the fact, they were like, wow, you're like a natural researcher. I felt so proud, because the thing is that I was just never satisfied with one or two sources. You know what I mean? Like I just knew, because historically, something that the book is actually pointing out is the people that get left off the page, the stories and the history that often doesn't get as much attention, because the people that are historically writing these books are old white guys, right? Just trying to cross-reference, to dig up stuff, to have multiple sources so that you can pick up on something that maybe one historian person just thinks is a throwaway, you know, and you go, wait, what was that? And then you can go down your own rabbit hole and like then just try to back stuff up. And it was just kind of exciting. Like there's a Joan of Arc chapter, right? And it's like, yeah, a lot of people know about Joan of Arc, but they might not know that one of the main crimes that sent her to the stake was wearing men's clothing. Like that was one of the main things. Maybe people don't know that angle of the story. You know what I mean? And so I did so much reading about her, and it's like, you think you know everything and you realize like, oh no, there's a lot. You can read transcripts from the trial. It's incredible.
Yeah, and I did not know that about Joan of Arc. So yeah, thank you for all the knowledge you've given to us. Tracy Dawson, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Let Me Be Frank, a book about women who dressed like men to do they weren't supposed to do.
Thank you so much, Deb.
That was Tracy Dawson. Her book, Let Me Be Frank, will be featured on WPR's Chapter a Day, beginning on January 17th. Find out more about Tracy and where you can listen to her book at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Bill Oakley, Francesca T. Royster, and Tracy Dawson. Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter at WPR Beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic!
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
I just don't have a place for dullness in my life anymore.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
No, I prefer him when he's drunk. It's all the rest of the time I have the problem with.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
You're more one of life's good guys.
You're more one of life's good guys. Aye.